nothing but professionalism here at the Jennifer Full Weimer Show.
Here we go. Okay, I have a bug that it just looks like a bug. Oh, I'm eating a bug. Wow. Okay.
The Jennifer Fulweiler Show. SiriusXM 129.
Jen Fulweiler, so delighted to be joining you here this afternoon. Come say hello at thejfshow.com. That has links to my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all of my favorite places to waste time online, and I'd absolutely love to hear from you. And I'm so excited to be talking to my guest for this segment. Bill Simon is the founder and chairman of Parish Catalyst. He is also a visiting professor in UCLA's law school. He is the co-chair of William E. Simon and Sons, an investment firm that he co-founded in 1988 with his brother and their father, William E. Simon Sr., who is a former U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. Bill Simon was assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York and later was the 2002 Republican gubernatorial nominee in California. So interesting guy, lots of interesting stuff to say. You can look up the great work he's doing now at parishcatalyst.org. And I'm so honored to have him here on the show. Bill Simon, welcome to the Jennifer Fulweiler Show.
Thank you, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing great. Bill, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good, good. Well, I'm really excited about what you all are doing at Parish Catalyst. And let me tell you, Bill, I come from a great parish. And in fact, this Saturday, I'm emceeing an event that we're having to celebrate this big event space that we just built at our parish, where we can have speakers come. It has a big auditorium. We also have a community clinic where people can come and get free medical care. And so this is a thriving, booming parish with thousands of families. And I have to think that this kind of thing is what you all are imagining when you have your parishcatalyst.org website that talks about how parishes can not just be places where people go to mass, but can be thriving organizations.
Yeah, boy, Jennifer, you took about three chapters out of my book, Great Catholic Parishes. You just summarized it right there.
Well, I'm lucky. I get to see it on the ground here in our parish.
What's your parish?
It's St. William in Round Rock, Texas, which is in the Austin, Texas area. So we're in the Diocese of Austin.
Fantastic. Well, we'd love to, you know, make contact with them because we've been working, Jennifer, with parishes just like the ones that you described, you know, vibrant, energetic parishes. And that's what the book that I wrote, Great Catholic Parishes, is all about. So you are singing to the choir.
That's right. Well, I do encourage people to get the book, Great Catholic Parishes. And so I like it how you talk about how there are four deceptively simple things that a parish can do. If someone is in a parish that maybe seems to be stagnating a little bit, it's not a vibrant community, it just doesn't seem like the, you know, the people are engaged in this parish as being a force in their community. You say there are four deceptively simple practices. And I'd love to go over these with you, Bill. And it starts with great Catholic parishes share leadership. And what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, in the old days, let's call it, I'm 65, Jennifer. And when I was growing up, the role of lay people, they used to kid, was three words: pray, pay, and obey.
I never heard that.
And now, the role of lay people is to share leadership. And, you know, we interviewed 244 pastors all over the country, Texas, California, New York State, every single state in our country. And, we taped and transcribed those interviews with the pastor's permission, of course, and we spent a year analyzing over 3,600 pages of transcripts. And my college professors would be shocked, to be honest with you. But we came up with 49 findings, and we grouped those 49 findings, Jennifer, into four categories, and that's what you referred to as the four deceptively simple practices. And the first one is leadership. So under that category of leadership, we had 12 findings, but I could summarize them for you in one word, and that word is shared. And that's what I mentioned a moment ago, has been a big change in the Catholic Church. Part of it's of necessity, because vocations and numbers of priests and nuns has declined. But part of it, too, is just the plain fact that lay people are good at many things, you know, administrative details, certain kinds of ministries. You know, their possible roles and activities in parishes are quite broad.
And it's interesting to me as a convert that I've heard people talk about that pray, pay, and obey idea of the laity. And I think to some extent, we still see this, Bill, in our parishes. And I really encourage people to get your book, Great Catholic Parishes. And I think the insight that applies to anyone listening is, I'm sure many people have ideas about their parish, maybe things they see that they don't like going on. And I think even in this day, it's easy for us to think, well, that's the priest's problem. You know, I'm not a priest, so what could I really do about the fact that we don't have as many people going to Mass? Or what could I really do about the fact that we don't have a strong youth program? And it sounds like what you guys are doing at Parish Catalyst is saying, no, that's your problem too. You as a parishioner, you as a layperson, why don't you get involved and start the youth ministry rather than just saying, gosh, I wish we had a youth ministry. That priest needs to get on it. I mean, is that kind of the kind of things that you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I think I just would add the point that, you know, in these interviews with 244 pastors, we got an idea of what you might call best practices are. And one of the best practices are that, you know, we talked about they share leadership. As part of that, they encourage lay people to be involved. And one of the other four deceptively simple practices is spiritual formation and discipleship. So that's the second one, spiritual formation and discipleship. And under that category, we had 13 findings basically that revolved around the idea that a pastor would encourage his parishioners to grow spiritually and have a specific plan for discipleship. And a lot of times, Jennifer, part of that is getting involved with the parish, whether it be a youth ministry, whether it be, you know, the finance council or what have you. And what we found is that many of these pastors, over 50%, were using tools that would measure engagement and measure people's strengths. Because, you know, lots of times on paper, someone might have a strength. For example, with my financial background, I was often asked to join the finance council. But my real love is something else. It is another kind of ministry. And I love young people. And so you wouldn't know that from my resume. So I think these strengths finders is what they call them, are opportunities for lay people to step forward and also to identify areas of particular strength.
And this is a great thing to think about, Bill, with I've actually heard of some parishes bringing in the St. Catherine of Siena Institute's gifts and talents program, where they can do the sort of personality inventory and discover their passions that maybe they didn't even know they had. And then there's kind of the next natural step of the parish says, okay, you just realized that you have a passion for organization. All right, we've got this, you know, we've got a mess back here in the back of our parish offices. Can you help us get this together? And I think this is a way you can pitch it to lay people that sounds kind of exciting. Like, let's discover our passions together and then see how we can use them in the service of God. That sounds a lot better than the sort of it sounds kind of burdensome when you say nobody's involved at the parish and we need more volunteers. That just sounds like a drag. That doesn't sound, you know, that sounds like something that would really sap your energy. So I think some of it is in the way we pitch it to people, isn't it?
Oh, boy, as always, isn't it? I mean, it really is true that the fact is, Jennifer, that the public narrative about the Catholic Church, if you look at the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, you know, other newspapers or the media, is often negative. It's often hear all the bad things about the Catholic Church. And one of the reasons I formed Parish Catalyst and wrote the book, Great Catholic Parishes, is because I wanted to emphasize the good narrative. And I don't have to make anything up. There is a really good narrative about the Catholic Church. And that good narrative is that there are hundreds of great Catholic parishes that are doing important, profound, and measurable work every single day all across the country. So I wanted to send out a message of optimism, Jennifer, but grounded in realism, that there really are these parishes. And in my opinion, now that I've been doing this work, I think the local church, going back centuries, has been the greatest engine for good in history.
Yep, and Bill, I think that's measurable even. I mean, if you look at the number of hospitals and charitable organizations founded by the church throughout the ages, it's overwhelming what a force for good the church has been in the world. And I like that what you're doing, again, in the book, that I really encourage people to get Great Catholic Parishes, and they can look up more info at parishcatalyst.org, is I like it that you're focusing on the positive and using case studies of real thriving parishes. Parishes, it sounds like the one that I'm fortunate enough to be at, and saying, okay, here's what these people are doing that's working. I think it's so encouraging for maybe someone who is at a parish that's hit a rough patch, that's not thriving. I think that's encouraging for them to see these success stories and see, yes, absolutely, your Catholic parish can absolutely be a tremendous force in your community. And let's look at places where it's actually happened.
Well, absolutely. And you know, the 49 findings in the book, most of them are easily doable by any parish. Now, some of them, admittedly, you know, for example, we found that great music can really help energize people. And sometimes great music takes money, so it may not be so easy. But most of the 49 findings apply to every single parish in the United States.
And that actually brings me to the third of the 4 points that people can find in the Great Catholic Parishes book, which is another one of these 4 deceptively simple practices that can help parishes take their parish life to the next level, is excel on Sundays. And is that what the music references was part of?
Exactly. So if we had 13 findings under that theme, the Sunday experience, I think one principal message is the Sunday experience does not begin on Sunday. It begins on Monday. It begins on Monday and goes to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, leading up to Sunday. And from Monday to Saturday, there's a wide range of activities that these vibrant parishes do, things like social media. And at age 65, I'm not going to tell you or your listeners that I'm any expert in social media. But I will tell you that these vibrant parishes, they're experts. And I highly doubt, if I could be bold and say, that it's the pastors that are experts on social media. You and I both know it's in all likelihood younger people. But they can then foster the connections between the pastor and his flock during the week. Then secondly, there's the idea, which I'm sure you're familiar with, given what you're telling me about your parish, of small groups. You know, it's been said that the larger a church is, the smaller it must become. And you do that with small groups of people that get together during the week. For example, you may be familiar with Alpha. It's a fantastic Bible study protocol that which is comprised of 10 to 12 people getting together in a parishioner's home once a week, during the week. That's another example of ways the parish can encourage involvement during the week. And then on Sunday, the Sunday experience does not begin when you walk in the front door of the church. It begins when you pull into the driveway. And in my case, well, it's now 10 years down the road. My kids are a little older. But 10 years ago, we'd pull in our car and the kids would be screaming and yelling and God knows what, right?
Sounds very familiar.
And so somebody would meet us at the car and say to the kids, "You're going to religious ed school." My wife and I would look at each other and we would breathe a sigh of relief. And then when we walked into church, that's where the music and the homily is very important. Now, I don't mean to take away from the Eucharist. That is the source and the summit. But a very high percentage of our pastors spoke about the need for energetic, relevant music. And almost all of them spoke about the necessity for good homilies. I mean, if you talk to a friend that you just met about their church and they say it's a great church, more than likely, one of the things they're going to talk about is our pastor gives great homilies. And the reason we found in our findings that this is not only self-evident, but it's important, is that a good homily, our pastors are telling us, Jennifer, takes preparation. You know, the general rule of thumb is a minute of homily equals 1 hour of prep. So if your homily is supposed to be 7 minutes, that's a whole day, realistically.
Wow, wow.
Then, which then means you've got to find time for that. And you know, in your church, with your pastor having such a lot of success, and there's a lot going on, same with my parish, Monica's in Santa Monica, California. For my pastor to carve out an entire day, that means he has to delegate. He has to share leadership. He has to take care of himself. We found 60% of our pastors spoke about self-care.
Wow, interesting. That's, and again, we absolutely do see that in our parish, that my pastor is very good at delegating. And I think that's not, it's not a surprise then that we have such a booming, thriving parish. And you mentioned the social media specifically. In fact, we have some local Catholic bloggers who were very passionate about what they do. They're really into the high-tech scene. And a lot of them are now involved at our parish running the social media. And so we have top-notch social media. We've got a great online presence. And it's all thanks to those lay people giving their gifts. And it's very exciting to see the way God can take someone's passion, even if their passion is Twitter, and they use it for the service of the church. It's really exciting to see. So Bill Simon, I really encourage people to get your book, Great Catholic Parishes. Look you up at parishcatalyst.org. And I want to make sure we don't run out of time before we get to this fourth deceptively simple practice that parishes can use to transform their parish life. This is the one I'm most curious about. You say evangelize in intentional, structured ways. I think structured is the word that surprised me most there. Tell me, Bill, what do you mean by that?
What our pastors talk about, 70% of them roughly say we've got to focus on evangelization, and that's what we've been doing. Now, I'd say, you know, prefatory to answering your question, Jennifer, that this is a change. You know, as I mentioned, I'm 65. When I was growing up, it was pray, pay, and obey, and for sure, it was make, you know, don't wear your faith on your sleeve. You know, your faith was a private thing. And that goes back historically to when, you know, immigrants came over in the 1800s and the early 1900s, and they would get to get parishes because they were welcome there. You know, the old Irish need not apply in New York City. Well, Catholics have now been integrated into society. There's no real excuse for not evangelizing. And a great majority of parishes do evangelize, but they do it in structured ways. So structure meaning the pastor as the leader is encouraging people to go on a mission trip. So our parish, for example, St. Monica's in Santa Monica, California, goes to Dondura in Nairobi, Kenya every year. In effect, St. Monica's has a sister parish.
Oh, wow.
And I've been there, and you know, many of my fellow parishioners have been there. We've been going every year for 17 years. And we have other types of activities in other parishes, you know, both locally in Southern California, but also down in Mexico. You know, we have an activity where we help build homes. So there's structure in terms of outreach, I would say, outside our immediate community. But there's also, Jennifer, structure in terms of outreach in the community. So in Santa Monica, California, you know, which is a city of 300,000 people, there's a lot you can do as outreach in your community. So there's, but you've got to give the parishioners the structure to know what the opportunities are that are available. Because I don't think most Catholics above a certain age are used to being encouraged to evangelize.
That's right.
And this is where, quite honestly, I think one of my favorite findings in the book is what I would call the Francis effect. Now, when we asked our pastors questions, we asked them 32 questions. And as I mentioned, we taped the answers and transcribed them. There was no question on the Pope. And, you know, maybe we should have had one, but we didn't have one. In fact, Pope Francis wasn't even the Pope when we started interviewing the pastors. But you know something? Even though there wasn't one question on the Pope, one out of every three of our 244 pastors brought up the Pope. And what did they bring up about the Pope? They said, this man is fantastic because he's pushing us to reach out. He's telling us about a field hospital where when the wounded come in, the first thing you ask them is not, show me your insurance coverage. It's, we're going to... And so Francis has had a huge impact on parishes all over the country. And that was maybe of all the 49 findings, Jennifer, that might be my favorite.
Oh, that is so interesting that one out of three priests brought this up without even being asked. And I love that, that the specific thing they said is that it, he used that field hospital analogy. That it, because I do think it's tempting to think of it like, well, this guy's an outsider. He doesn't even, he hasn't received the sacrament of confession in years. He doesn't belong here among the good Catholics. And Pope Francis is telling us to turn that idea on its head. And so that's really interesting to hear what an impact that had. Well, Bill Simon, this has absolutely been a fascinating discussion. We're about out of time, but of course, I really encourage people to get this book, Great Catholic Parishes, to look you up at parishcatalyst.org. And I also want to emphasize, when we're talking about people getting this book, someone might be listening and thinking, oh, my pastor needs to read that. But this is intended for lay people to read as well, correct?
Sure, absolutely. Anybody associated with a parish, and I might say that there are 80 million Catholics now, roughly, and 80% of them are affiliated with a parish. So I'm not expecting the book to sell 64 million copies, but...
You never know.
You never know.
Yep. So this is something that a layperson could read and then maybe convey the points to their pastor, suggest it to their pastor. But I will say, like I said, Bill, as someone who is in one of these parishes, who I think is actually following these four deceptively simple practices that you recommend in the Great Catholic Parishes book, I will say it is transformative, not just to our parish community, but in my own life. It impacts me to be part of such a neat organization. We've got symphony orchestras performing to celebrate different feast days. Again, we've got the free medical clinic. And so it benefits me as an individual. So I really encourage anyone listening to consider getting the Great Catholic Parishes book. It will change your life and not just your parish's life. And Bill Simon, it has been so fun to talk to you here on the Jennifer Fulweiler Show today.
Jennifer, thank you for having me on. It was my privilege, and I really appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks so much, Bill, and keep up the great work. And I've got more good stuff coming up next here on the Jennifer Fulweiler Show.